The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, your home for NPR News for more than 32 years. And this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 16th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack says the plan to replace the Affordable Care Act isn't perfect, but he says he sees value in what's included in the first phase. He'll talk with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics about the plan in just a few minutes. And later, our militant grammarian is back with a list of some of her favorite words and their definitions. First, over the last few months, you may have spotted a six-wheeled machine rolling through the University of Arkansas campus or downtown Fayetteville. It's part of a pilot program that will allow students to receive packages via a delivery robot. The program is a partnership between the Macmillan Innovation Studio and the Sam M. Walton College of Business and London-based Starship Technologies. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently went out on a test run with the robot, and she brings back this report.
About a year ago, University of Arkansas senior Matt Shepard began working on a project with Starship Technologies. In July 2014, two co-founders of Skype launched the company, which has created the world's first delivery robot.
It's a good conversation starter, that's for sure. Tell people I'm the guy that walks the robot everywhere.
Part of Shepard's job is to follow the robot around campus as it maps the area and tests autonomous routes. Walking a few yards behind the machine, Shepard wears a white pair of earbuds and carries a black PlayStation 4 controller that he can use for an emergency stop. When not running an autonomous route, the robot is controlled by an operator.
So right now, I'm on the phone with an operator in Estonia named Joel. Joel, you still there? He said yes, but you can't hear him.
The robot elicits a range of reactions from passersby. Some people are curious.
What is that?
It's a delivery robot.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Technology.
Some are amused. Most take pictures on their phones, and a few look disturbed and take a wide path around the robot. The machine is about 27 inches long, 22 inches wide, and 22 inches deep. It's white with black trim and uses six wheels to travel on sidewalks. The robot has cameras to assist remote handlers, ultrasonic sensors to detect nearby pedestrians, and a little flag that lights up. On this day, we encounter a man who has his own design suggestions that he's sure people will love.
On the front of it, you're going to put a snout.
A snout.
Make the tail curly, paint it red, and turn it into a little razorback running around a campus. It's a great idea. Think about it.
Oh, maybe, maybe.
This robot is one of two at the U of A. Henry Harris Berland, head of marketing and communications for Starship Technologies, says more than 3 million people have encountered the robots, which have been tested in 50 cities in over 16 countries. He says the company was created because its founders wanted to collaborate on a new project.
And they were looking for industries that hadn't been disrupted by technology and robotics, and they came across the last mile industry. And the last mile industry, by definition, is the last sort of couple of miles between a hub or a store and a customer's house. And it's notoriously inefficient. You know, think about vans stopping and starting 100 times outside of 100 houses, and, you know, people aren't at home most of the time, and pollution and congestion, et cetera, et cetera.
The co-founders thought they could solve these problems using semi-autonomous delivery robots. What they've created is an approximately 50-pound device that travels about 4 miles per hour and makes deliveries in a 2-mile radius. Once the robot arrives, patrons receive a text with a link they can click to unlock the lid and retrieve their package.
So we're doing commercial deliveries with companies like Just Eat, which is Europe's largest food takeaway company, Postmates and DoorDash in the United States, Swiss Post, Hermes parcel delivery. So lots of companies that are in the parcel delivery industry, the grocery industry, and the food delivery industry.
Starship Technologies opened an office in Redwood City, California in December. The company now operates there, as well as in Washington, D.C. and Fayetteville, and Harris Berland says they're looking to expand in the U.S. The robots currently in operation select the safest, not the quickest route, and still need assistance crossing the street.
Now, in the future, the robots won't have robot handlers, of course, so the human interaction will be reduced. There will still always be human oversight from the operator, who could be sat anywhere in the world, who can take control of a robot at any time if needed. But the robot handlers will be phased out. So instead of one robot handler to one robot, it might be one robot handler to a particular area, overseeing a number of robots, and it would go something like that in the future.
Harris Berland says no one has attempted to steal a robot. However, there are theft prevention measures in place.
So we have cameras around the front and back, which can be recording. We've got two-way audio. We've got alarms if you pick up the robot and try and run down the road. The lid's locked, so you can't actually get inside and you don't know what's inside. And most importantly, it's tracked to the nearest inch, so we know exactly where the robot is at all times. So it'd be quite embarrassing, maybe someone trying to lift it up and run down the street whilst it's blaring a siren. They try and break into it after 5 minutes and get a pint of milk or something like that. So it would be a huge embarrassment and waste of time.
A partnership with an Arkansas company is forthcoming. Harris Berland says while he can't yet release a name, it's very exciting. He expects to launch the partnership in a few weeks. For now, U of A students can sign up online to participate in the pilot program. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
A link to that application form can be found at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. Starship Technologies is partnering with the McMillan Innovation Studio for the pilot program, and we'll learn more about that U of A-based innovation center on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF.
Thousands of listeners to KUAF give annual or monthly gifts online at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. The progress of the proposed replacement for the Affordable Care Act is modest. Democrats are lashing out against the plan. Some Republicans, including Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton, have voiced displeasure. And this week, the Congressional Budget Office released an estimate that the plan could mean millions lose health care coverage, but billions in dollars could be saved for the federal government. This week, Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics reached out to Arkansas's 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack for his thoughts about the plan. The congressman says he's a lean yes on the proposal, and that while the package isn't perfect, it is, in his opinion, better than not doing anything at all. Roby asked Congressman Womack about the Congressional Budget Office estimates released earlier this week.
It talks about the fact that there would be about 14 million people that would lose their insurance over the course of the next year, possibly 24 million over the next 10 years. How do you justify a vote like that to some of your constituents? Because when you come home, as you've experienced from some town hall meetings, this is a big concern to them. And you would be voting for a bill that would take insurance away or cause 14 to 24 million people to lose their insurance.
Yeah, I've heard that argument, Roby, but let me debunk some of that argument. Whenever you remove mandates, and this was part of our promise, we were going to rid the country of the Obamacare mandates. When you take mandates away, when you take a mandate away that says you must buy something, then it's obvious there are going to be people out there that are not going to be subject to that mandate. Nobody's going to be subject to those mandates anymore if this thing passes. And naturally, a number of people, how does CBO quantify that? I don't know. There are going to be a number of people that won't buy health insurance. So I think that drives that number up. To what extent, I don't know. But these are all things that we covered in the A Better Way agenda that was part of our campaign promise in the 2016 elections. And again, not a perfect bill, but it is a bill that we can start with that accomplishes a lot of things that we said we needed to do in a health care reform. It's going to lower the deficit. It's going to bring down premiums. CBO's already said that. And it will accomplish a number of other objectives that are very, very important to our side, to include introducing free market principles that will help drive down the cost of not only health care, but insurance. When we get to the second and third phases of this entire process, second phase being HHS secretary having the power of his office to do certain things, and then through regular order, third phase is to do things like tort reform or bringing competition to selling insurance across state lines and those kinds of things that can't be done as part of reconciliation.
Do you think that, as you mentioned, there's three phases to this and that what you guys have lined out here. Is that third phase what we're supposed to bank on in terms of accepting that there's going to be some sort of conditions that are put together that would cause more people to buy insurance? Or do you think that we're at a point in this country where fewer people should have health insurance as a result of what's going to happen in this first phase of the bill?
Well, I know that's a difficult question to answer, but let me just say this. We would love to be able to do repeal and replace all under in one bill and get this done, game, set, match. The problem is, in order to repeal, if you subject it to a filibuster in the Senate, you're not going to have the votes over there. We have 52 Republicans. Holding 52 and getting 8 would be problematic for our conference. For Republicans. So what you do is, and I think Speaker Ryan's done a really good job of articulating this message, you use the tools that you have available. Reconciliation as part of the FY17 budget resolution to be able to do what you can do in reconciliation now, which is limited, and we're there. Then HHS Secretary has a lot of power granted to him as a member of the executive branch and the president's cabinet. Secretary Price will go through all of the tools available to him to perfect this health care situation. Then, and only then, will we be able to go to the floor in the House and the Senate under regular order, regular committee order, bringing bills to the House and to the Senate that deal with the issues that I spoke of earlier that cannot be accomplished through the reconciliation process. And I know that's a lot of political speak, and we tend to lose people when we talk about it. But remember, three phases. This is phase number one, and we're doing everything that we can do under phase one through reconciliation to get us to phase two and phase three.
I guess a little bit more to the heart of my question, though, is it looks like you guys are on a path to make it to where fewer people will have health insurance after this is all said and done. Is that the ultimate goal? Is that right, that we should be structuring something that doesn't broaden the opportunity for people to have more access to affordable health care?
Well, Roby, I understand your question, and I know you want to get me painted into a corner to admit that we're going to have fewer people covered by health insurance. But let me tell you something. What's driving this train right now into a train wreck is Obamacare. Obamacare, as Mr. Trump has adequately described it, is a disaster. It's going to implode on its own. So this train wreck is going to happen anyway. We're trying to minimize the damage of an Obamacare train wreck by coming back and doing something that we think is much more workable and doable and achieves a lot of the principles that we understand. So I'm not going to take the bait. I'm not going to be backed into a corner and give you a talking point or a soundbite that says, yeah, there goes a congressman talking about this is the ultimate goal of Obamacare to make sure people aren't insured. Nobody wants to see that happen. But as we've already said, when you take the mandates away, there will be people make a decision not to be covered by health insurance.
Well, I'm not trying to paint you into a corner, Congressman, just trying to act work with the information I have from the CBO. But Governor Asa Hutchinson has expressed an interest in having more state flexibility with Medicaid, has also, I think, put some pressure on you guys to say, don't reduce the amount of money that you're sending to the states for Medicaid. What do you think happens on Medicaid there? Are you in favor of kind of honoring what the Governor Hutchinson's asking for? Do you think something different will happen in that direction?
Well, we don't want to hardship Arkansans, and I certainly appreciate the governor's input. And I've had a lot of input from Governor Hutchinson, and I do enjoy the back and forth. In fact, one day he called me. I was in the budget committee talking about these various issues. And I know Governor Hutchinson wants to roll back the Medicaid expansion to 100% of federal poverty level. But the fact is, we got a lot of Medicaid expansions that have happened around the country, and a number of people covered under these expansions that could be hardshipped by any changes in this bill. We want to minimize that damage. And obviously, the Medicaid expansion piece is a central piece of the discussions going on right now about what we change if we change something. You know, I mentioned top-end income earners and how they're treated. Well, the Medicaid expansion is also part of that formula, too, in terms of just when do we roll this back. Right now, it's a 2020 proposition. There are some hardcore conservatives that want to move that to 2018. So if there's going to be a change in any of these rules, in a change in this proposed law, then it will either happen in a budget committee amendment or it could happen on the floor of the House, maybe in a manager's amendment in the Senate. So we'll just kind of see how it unfolds. But let's remember, this is the American political process at work right now. Three equal and separate branches of government. We are the legislative branch, and it's important that we do it in a very transparent, very thoughtful way, and I think that's exactly how we're approaching it.
Congressman Steve Womack of Arkansas's 3rd District talked with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business and Politics earlier this week. You can see the entire interview and find a daily podcast about Arkansas news at talkbusiness.net. Ahead on today's show, our militant grammarian Catherine Sherrills brings us a list of some of her favorite words in the English language, like the word katzenjammer.
Loud and discordant noise. It's also a hangover.
The militant grammarian returns ahead on today's Ozarks at Large.
This week on Morning Edition, as the U.S. Secretary of State takes his first official visit to Asia, expectations are high.
Every governor of every state in the union wants more trade with Asia and more investment from Asia. There will be uncertainty, there will be disruptions, but there will also be some pretty strong interest groups in the U.S. that have a stake in us being engaged and leading in Asia.
What's on the agenda for Tillerson in Asia? Listen every weekday morning to Morning Edition.
Morning Edition. Every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. 91.3 FM KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Support for 91.3 also comes from Westwood Gardens, featuring locally grown annuals, perennials, roses, vegetables, and herbs, as well as trees and shrubs. Spring garden supplies available at all 4 locations in Northwest Arkansas. WestwoodGardens.com for more information. This is Ozarks at Large. A bill expanding who can carry concealed guns and also expanding where those guns can be carried has moved along at the state capitol. As Chris Hickey from our partner station KUAR reports, the bill has earned approval from both chambers of the legislature and now is headed to the governor's desk.
By a vote of 71 to 18, the Arkansas House of Representatives concurred in the final Senate amendment to HB 1249. That amendment took what had been a bill allowing only employees of public state universities to carry concealed handguns on campuses and extended that privilege to people 21 and up who have concealed carry licenses. Those carriers would have to undergo 8 additional hours of training. They would also be allowed to carry concealed firearms into many of the state's public buildings, including the state capitol, and into private bars that choose to allow it. After several changes were made over the last month to HB 1249, debate in the House was relatively brief. Fayetteville Republican Representative Charlie Collins explained the training requirements to be developed by the state police.
Obviously, the benefit we have in Arkansas is that one of the national experts from his work happens to be our governor. The Arkansas State Police report to him, so he'll be able to help oversee all that to the degree he wants to get personally involved in how they do it.
Collins is referring to Governor Asa Hutchinson's role in a task force the National Rifle Association assembled in the wake of the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting. That task force called for armed and trained guards at schools around the country in order to prevent other mass shootings. Republican Representative Carolyn Brown of Sherwood defended this idea by saying bad guys target gun-free zones.
One of the problems with having these areas where guns are not allowed, concealed or not, is that those are the places that are victimized by the cowards that pull out their guns and shoot many people.
Little Rock Democratic Representative John Walker and Republican Representative Kim Hendren of Gravette spoke against the legislation. Hendren, a brother-in-law of the governor, argued the bill's provision on concealed carry in churches would fail to preserve the anonymity of those who already carry in houses of worship, while simultaneously inviting more members of the public to bring guns in.
I understand this bill, the way it's been messed up down there now is, if I want to keep that situation in my little church, then I've got to put up a sign there, guns are allowed in here, I think something like that. If I don't put the sign up, then guns aren't allowed.
Hendren said that requirement would invite people who have malevolent intent.
This bill needs fixing.
Representative John Walker remarked that allowing guns into the halls of government could unnecessarily escalate what are normally civil disagreements or lead to injurious accidents.
I would hate to have a gun at my age and my reflexes. And then when Mr. Collins turns around with his gun and points it in my face, I pick it up. And I somehow or another don't aim right, and I hit the speaker.
Walker went on to criticize what he saw as the underlying motives behind expanding concealed carry privileges.
There's just too much fear. And as much fear as we have, then as little reconciliation and progress as a civilized society we can have.
Governor Hutchinson is expected to sign the bill, which would take effect September 1st. In Little Rock, I'm Chris Hickey.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Also yesterday at the state capitol, a bill banning the sale of marijuana edibles passed in a House committee on a voice vote. The bill was sponsored by Robin Lundstrom of Elm Springs and would allow medical caregivers to prepare medical edible marijuana at a patient's home. Representative Lundstrom says despite rules that edible marijuana would have to be packaged in childproof containers, items such as cookie or brownies could be enticing to young people. Supporters of medical marijuana say some patients prescribed the drug would be able to ingest medical marijuana the easiest through edibles. Arkansas voters approved medical marijuana last November, but the amendment is subject to alteration by two-thirds majorities in both chambers of the Arkansas legislature. A bill that would have extended the period of time state or governmental entities can comply with a Freedom of Information Act request failed to advance out of an Arkansas House committee yesterday. Jacksonville Democratic State Representative Bob Johnson's bill would have extended the time that agencies could use to comply with Freedom of Information Act requests from 3 business days to 15 business days if the request was, quote, unduly burdensome. Johnson says the bill was needed in cases where Freedom of Information requests were made for large amounts of records.
You have multitudes of records. You would think it'd be easier, but people are requesting more and larger records that you're having to get. Some of them may be digitized, some may not, and so it can be overly burdensome.
Dan Greenberg of the conservative think tank Advance Arkansas Institute spoke against the bill. He says an unduly burdensome records request could be an interpretation abused by the keeper of those records.
If I have anything better to do with my time, then I don't have to comply with this FOIA request. I'm allowed to place it at the bottom of my list of job duties, and those job duties could include reorganizing my office, you know, sweeping out the place.
The bill is one of several that would place further limits on Arkansas's 50-year-old Freedom of Information Act. The Arkansas Press Association, which has opposed most Freedom of Information Act bills this session, was neutral on Johnson's bill. 3 colleges on the University of Arkansas campus are moving up in the latest U.S. News & World Report Best Graduate Schools list. The 2017 rankings place the College of Education and Health Professions graduate programs at number 50 among the country's schools, an improvement of 20 places over the previous list. The College of Engineering advanced 8 spots to number 104, and the University of Arkansas School of Law was listed as 42nd best among public schools and 77th overall. U.S. News makes the rankings based on several factors, including placement success of graduates, resources, and research. A business team from the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the U of A is bringing back a prize of $15,000 after winning the University of Manitoba's Stu Clark Investment Competition this week. The team is working with a University of Arkansas chemistry professor in the development of a window coating that helps absorb more damaging ultraviolet light than other window coatings. The team also placed 2nd in the competition's logo contest and 3rd in the elevator pitch competition. Funding for the Delta Regional Authority would be eliminated under President Trump's first budget request to Congress. The federal agency is designed to help encourage and coordinate economic development in states tied to the Mississippi River Delta. Former Arkansas U.S. Senator Blanche Lincoln helped create the federal-state partnership in 1999, along with former Arkansas Republican Senator Tim Hutchinson. That's while Bill Clinton was in office. Two of Arkansas's current congressmen, Steve Womack and Bruce Westerman, sit on the House Budget Committee. The basketball postseason begins tonight for the John Brown University women's basketball team. JBU faces Benedictine of Kansas tonight in the first round of the NAIA National Championship Tournament in Billings, Montana. The two teams actually met to open the JBU season in early November in Siloam Springs. JBU won that game 70-66. John Brown enters the game tonight with a 22-8 overall record. The winner tonight would play again on Friday night. The Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team starts play in the NCAA tournament tomorrow afternoon. Arkansas faces Seton Hall in the game at 12:30 in Greenville, South Carolina. The winner advances to the round of 32 in a game that would be played Sunday. And the Razorback baseball team, now 14-4, after defeating Alcorn State yesterday in Fayetteville 11-3. The SEC season starts tomorrow night for Arkansas at Baum Stadium when the Razorbacks host Mississippi State. First pitch scheduled for 6:30. And the Arkansas softball team will try to snap a four-game losing streak tomorrow night at Bogle Park on the U of A campus when they host number 14 Tennessee beginning at 6.
That's the Anderson Brothers performing Bud on Bach. Hi, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. Every Friday night from 10 till midnight on 91.3 FM, I'll feature music that will be performed live in Northwest Arkansas in the next 2 months, including more from the Anderson Brothers, Orrin Etkin, Justin Coughlin, Edward Simon. Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me, our militant grammarian, Catherine Sherrills. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Hey, Kyle. What's your favorite word to say?
To say?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to be a common word. It's just my favorite one to
just
say.
Just one that you like to say.
I got a couple.
Okay.
Balderdash.
Great one.
But really, someday I'm going to do a story about whales just so I can say blubber. It's just fun. Say that and not smile. Blubber.
You know, blubber's not onomatopoeic, but it almost sounds
right.
Like it is.
Blubber.
It?
I mean, it's just, you got an L, you got like seven or eight B's in there. Those are my favorites to say.
Those are good.
Do you have one?
I have a list.
Oh, okay.
A few weeks ago, I talked about the word gallimaufry.
Yes, you did.
Which is a confused jumble or medley of things. And I had a short list of words that I'd been collecting under the heading words I like to say. And so I thought I could write about them, but I didn't have enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I did what everyone does these days. I Googled fun words.
Okay.
There are many, many lists.
Of course there are.
All right. So here's one I really like. Mm-hmm. Rigmarole.
Oh, that's a good word. Rigmarole.
Now, tell me how you, well, what does it mean, first of all?
Rigmarole is sort of, it's a combination between a dog and pony show and something that's kind of out of hand, kind
hassles
of a mess.
You, right? It's
yeah,
a hassle, right?
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Oh,
word?
I have no idea.
Come on.
Okay.
It's not that far from
right.
What it sounds like.
R-I-G-A-M-A-R-O-L-E.
Except uh-huh. That's right. Now that's how people will spell it.
Okay,
but it has no first A. It's rigmarole.
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 Well, it's not as fun to say if it's rigmarole.
No, it's not. And
really,
even though it's spelled that way, the one of the preferred pronunciations is rigmarole.
Well, there you go. Wow, I had no idea.
Isn't that crazy?
The spelling itself is a rigmarole.
It is. Another word I particularly like is vim.
Vim.
Vim. Do you know what vim is?
I don't know what vim is. Vim and vigor?
Yeah.
I've never thought
See,
of it as its
I know.
Own.
That's why I like it. I divorce it from vigor.
Okay.
And I like it. It means energy and enthusiasm. He has a lot of vim.
Oh, gosh. I like that. Okay. Vim. All right.
Now, here are two unrelated words that I knew how to pronounce long, long before I knew how to spell them.
Mm-hmm.
Hegemony.
Hegemony.
Now, what does that mean? Do you know?
That's like in leadership, Is it concentrated power by mm-hmm. one entity over the other?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Leadership or dominance, especially by one country or social group over okay. another. A good buddy of mine in law school used the word occasionally, and not only did I not know then what it meant until I looked it up, I sure would not have known how to spell it. I probably would have mispronounced it, as many do, as hegemony.
Hegemony, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, can you guess what the memory trick is that I use to remember that it's pronounced hegemony?
No. What is it?
Hegemony.
Hegemony? Jiminy?
Jiminy.
Jiminy Cricket?
Yep. That's right. What I remember.
Walt Disney to the rescue. Huh. Hegemony. Well,
hegemony, yeah.
I'll never think
and
of it.
And I hear that mispronounced.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think any, you know, you don't, it doesn't look anything like hegemony.
No.
It looks like hegemony.
I got to say that I think 95% of my relationship with that word is in print. I don't really mm-hmm. hear people
yeah.
say it that
mm-hmm.
often.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think there must have been some kind of event or something mm-hmm. locally, maybe a year ago or so, because I heard a lot of folks on KUAF hmm. mispronounce it.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Okay. The second word is one that I heard my mother say fairly often during my childhood, usually in conversations with adults.
Mm-hmm.
The word is vitiate.
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 Now, I know vitiate, but I don't know vitiate.
You know what?
Like, if you take, you know, eviscerate is what I'm trying to say.
Gotcha.
I know
okay.
eviscerate, but
all
vitiate?
Right. No, vitiate.
I don't know what that is.
In time, I came to understand what it meant, or I thought I did.
Okay.
In research for this piece, I found that my understanding was directly opposite.
And this isn't a contronym. It can't mean...
Not a, okay. No, no. It means to spoil or impair the quality or efficiency of, or to destroy the legal validity of. And that's probably how she knew it, because mm-hmm. she comes from a long line of lawyers. But I am astounded, because I thought it meant to rectify or rehabilitate.
Oh.
Exactly the opposite.
Wow.
I thought that that would vitiate the situation and make it better. No, it makes it worse.
So if you had told ever someone to go vitiate that, it would have been...
Yeah. All right. But the reason the word is on my list is the way it's spelled. I never saw the word in print until I was in law
yeah,
school.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I didn't recognize it until I sounded it out.
Mm.
It's spelled V-I-T-I-A-T-E. Vitiate.
Well, you want to make that first T hard, don't
uh-huh.
you? Vitiate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of several or a few wonderful discoveries I made in law school about words.
Mm-hmm.
I took a course called Water Law.
Water Law.
Uh-huh, and the
okay.
only reason I took it is that Jake Looney was teaching it, mm. and I love Jake Looney, and he told us about a case that had to do with a gar hole.
Okay.
And evidently this is a fishing mm-hmm. sandbar
yeah.
kind
right.
of thing. Yeah,
yeah,
okay. We had a cabinet in my grandmother's house that we call the gar hole.
Ah.
It had the liquor in it.
Okay.
But that came from our fisherman
right.
Family, you know, that called it.
And so now you finally...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway. Okay, here's a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Discombobulate.
I do. That's a good one.
So much fun to say.
And that's to unsettle or confuse something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Milwaukee airport, when you've gone through TSA and you've taken off all your clothes...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
There is a sign with chairs and things, a sign above it that says, recombobulation area.
Is that a word to
no.
recombobulate? Okay. Well, that kind of makes sense.
It's, I know. It's
if you've wonderful. Been discombobulated, you should be able to
recombobulate.
Right. Right.
All right. Who can deny that this phrase is fun to say? Heebie-jeebies.
Oh, yeah. It gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. And what is that?
Yeah. It makes me feel uneasy
yeah.
or a little bit queasy.
Fear, anxiety.
Yeah.
My fondness for this phrase has to do with a dear departed friend of ours. I can't remember the context, but in President Clinton's first days, Mike Galden,
oh.
who was his press secretary mm-hmm. when Clinton was governor, was on TV,
mm-hmm.
and he was quoted saying heebie-jeebies. It pretty much sealed the identity of the incoming administration as from the Hicks, from the sticks,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah.
But heebie-jeebies, it was coined by W.B. DeBeck, an American cartoonist.
Barney Google.
Uh-huh. And, of course, that's appropriate to the memory since Galdon was an excellent editorial cartoonist.
Right. And Barney Google, of course, begat Snuffy Smith.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, if you're under 30, you still don't know what the heck I'm talking
that's
about.
That's right. Nobody knows right. what we're talking about.
Right.
So that exhausts the short list I had begun, but here are some fun words from the Internet. And for you, Kyle, it's quiz time.
Okay. All right.
Do you know what these words mean?
Mm-hmm.
Jillick.
To be left at the altar.
Nope.
I'm just guessing there.
To skip a stone across water.
Jillick.
So why do you need that word?
Well, you know, it's probably from an older time when there were... When maybe... Did you plunge it? Did you jillick it? I mean, you know, different times. You had different...
Strange.
Right.
Strange. It reminds me of that... I hope that it's true because I believe it. The thing about that some Native Americans have six different words
sure.
for barbed wire
right.
or something like that.
Right.
All right. What does this mean? Katzenjammer.
Oh man, we're hitting all the old comic strips right now. There were the Katzenjammer kids. Who? Let me see if I can work this out because I don't know off the top of my head what it means. But the Katzenjammer kids were mischievous and rambunctious and sort of. Rowdy, so does it mean any of those
things?
It's
a loud and discordant noise.
There you go.
It's also a hangover, which I've never heard that expression.
Yeah, well, that fits, right? Yeah.
Or a state of depression or bewilderment.
Okay.
Yeah. Panjandrum.
Panjandrum.
I hope that's how you pronounce it. I'm not sure.
So pan usually means all.
Okay.
Jan, I have no idea. I can't figure this one out.
A pompous official or pretender. Also, the mock title of a self-important person.
Well, sounds like something
who
Lewis...
could that apply to?
It sounds like something Lewis Carroll would have come
up
with.
Yeah, it does. I bet you it is. Okay, here's one that just blew me away. Penny farthing.
I am not making this up. I just watched a documentary within the last week about penny farthing racing. Penny farthings are those bicycles you see with the big front wheel and the lower, the very small, first wheel bicycles to gain mass acceptance. Mm-hmm. And so you got to kind of stand up to get on the seat. That's a penny farthing. It also, I believe, was slang for a certain British coin for a while.
It sounds like a coin. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have certainly guessed it was a coin, a British coin.
But now there are groups that still race penny farthings.
Wow. And, I mean, everybody knows the image of the bicycle.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen that. I never knew what it was called, and I sure wouldn't have picked that name out of any list. Okay. Popinjay.
A popinjay, the way I think it's been used, is to be someone who's kind of full of themselves but doesn't have any right to, sort of fatuous.
It can be either talkative or conceited.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Raconteur.
A raconteur. I love that word. I think a raconteur is, again, this is kind of what I've, kind of a suave yet not really trustworthy person.
That's what I would have thought.
Yeah.
It is one skilled in telling stories.
Okay, sure.
Which, I mean, could be what you're saying, but it's much broader.
Because I would always think, like, not quite a snake oil salesman, but close. Mm-hmm. Someone, if they're good at telling stories, there's some suspicion there, I would say.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
right.
Newspaper reporters are good at telling stories.
You're right. I always had a slightly negative context.
I did, too. And, and I mean, this is a very... very brief definition that were the ones that were provided here. So maybe it is. Maybe it does generally have a negative connotation. But if it's just skilled in telling stories, I'd like to be a raconteur.
Well, you're far more raconteur than Popinjay. I'll tell you that right now. Catherine Sherrill is our militant grammarian. This is Ozarks at Large. A beloved bakery reopened this month in Fort Smith. Owner Sandy Smith called it a 17-year hiatus. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek stopped by Sandy's Bake Shop between the morning and afternoon rush hours for some tasty handmade treats.
Bobby Miller is putting chocolate frosting on recently filled eclairs as we talk.
It just amazes me how
you can take raw dough and make something fantastic out of it.
Miller says he's been baking for a long time. 13 years of it was spent working for Sandy and Mike Smith, the first time Sandy's Bake Shop was open.
Well, as soon as I found out that it was open, they called me and I said, yes, I will come back because I missed it. They were just like my mom and dad, and I love them to death.
The Smiths opened their bake shop in 1981 near the corner of Jenny Lint Road and Phoenix Avenue. They later moved down Jenny Lint Road across from Ramsey Junior High. But after 19 years, Sandy Smith says they had to close when her husband became ill.
Oh, it was devastating, but, you know, we really didn't have a choice. He was kind of the heart and soul. He began his baking career when he was 12 years old at the Grand Bakery. Virgil Sellers taught him from the bottom up.
Sandy says Grand Bakery was one of the biggest in Fort Smith in the 60s and 70s. The first time around, opening a bakery was her husband's idea. This time, 17 years later, Sandy says her two sons talked her into it.
They asked me, you know, why can we not do it? And I don't want to be retired. I'm not a person that likes to be retired. You know, even when we were closed, I still did things for friends and family, but I never dreamed that I would be so fortunate to get to do it again. And we are so grateful for all the people that have come and are still coming.
And even though some things are very different, Sandy's husband can no longer bake. Sandy says the recipes are still the same.
We still have the same Danish rolls. We still have the old-fashioned cream horns. And of course, the Mississippi mud brownies is one of our big things.
And what exactly is a Mississippi mud brownie?
It's a brownie that will have a white, like cream frosting, and it'll have chocolate and pecans over that. Just real ooey and gooey.
And there's nothing wrong with that. All the treats are on display in glass cases up front with room for tables and chairs, which Sandy says they're fixing to get. Behind the cases, you can look right into the bakery. The whole space is open, perfect for another tradition Sandy says she plans to bring back.
And one of the things that we had in mind, of course, was all the children. They can come in and watch them bake, and they like that. And I also did it so when it gets springtime and all the little preschools and kindergartens do their little field trips, it's a wonderful place for them to get to come. So it's going to really be, I done it before, I'll do it again. You know, I'm looking real forward to all that.
And Sandy says she gets to do it all again with a lot of familiar faces. Bobby Miller wasn't the only one who came back when the Smiths reopened their shop.
I was 15 years old. This was my very first shop.
Andrea Crowder says she worked for Sandy and Mike for 6 or 7 years after that. When the bakery closed, they stayed in touch. And when she heard the Smiths were back in business, she came back to work the counter.
Oh, yeah, it's like riding a bike, you know.
And Crowder says the customers are keeping her busy.
Oh, my gosh, it's been outrageous. It's been, like, crazy mad. But everybody, I mean, it's line to line. I mean, the door has been lined with people, you know. This has probably been the slowest day today that I've been here.
Bobby Miller says seeing those lines is why he bakes.
Oh, it feels good. I just love the way people just pile in here and, you know, they're buying stuff that you made.
And all that stuff, Sandy Smith says it still has her husband's heart and soul in it, even though they've had to raise the prices a little since the last time they were open. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
Sandy's Bake Shop is now located on Zero Street in the same plaza as the Walmart Supercenter in Fort Smith. The bakery is open from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Now, who do we talk to about getting the deluxe cheeseburger back in Fayetteville? This is Ozarks at Large.
What kind of justice would Judge Neil Gorsuch be if he makes it to the Supreme Court?
On issues like abortion and affirmative action and gun rights and states' rights, we can expect him overall to be a reliable conservative vote.
I'm Audie Cornish. What Judge Gorsuch's past rulings tell us about his possible future this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
From 3 to 6 today on 91.3. Here's a possible coming attraction to your local theater, a frosty brew to go along with your popcorn, milk duds, and movie. That's one of the subjects examined in this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report.
I'm Paul Gatling, editor of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. Today's top story, a new report issued by the Northwest Arkansas Council that indicates employment totals in the region will be on the rise in the next 3 years. I'll visit with Business Journal reporter Jennifer Joyner about some of her latest headlines. And it's mid-March, and that means it's time to fill out those brackets. Embrace the madness, people. We'll take a look at some key numbers in a moment. But first, the number of jobs employers plan to add over the next 3 years in Northwest Arkansas continues to rise, according to an annual report released late last week by the Northwest Arkansas Council. Nearly 500 employers took part in the 2016 Northwest Arkansas Regional Employer Retention and Expansion Survey, and those companies say they expect to hire a little more than 3,600 people over the next 3 years. Employers also say that they expect to spend more than $500 million on expansions and investments by 2019. That's up from $336 million they indicated in last year's survey. The Regional Employment Survey is a collaborative effort between the Northwest Arkansas Council and Chambers of Commerce in Bentonville, Fayetteville, Rogers, Siloam Springs, and Springdale. To find out more, read the story at our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Jennifer Joyner covers a variety of topics at the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, and she joins me now to talk about one of her latest stories on our website. Jennifer, how are you?
I'm great, thank you.
One of the more interesting topics you tackled recently examined the trend of movie theaters that serve alcohol. Where is that happening?
Well, a handful of Arkansas movie theaters serve beer and wine right now, and none of those are in Northwest Arkansas. But two major film exhibition companies, AMC and Malco, have announced plans to bring alcohol service to cinemas in the region. So if they're able to gain permits from Alcoholic Beverage Control, several theaters, including two in Fayetteville alone, will be serving liquor by the time summer blockbuster season hits.
That sounds interesting. Now, what are some of the stumbling blocks maybe that cinema operators might be facing when they get a license to serve alcohol?
Well, ABC said that some of the out-of-state companies might find that they can't do things in Arkansas the way they've done them in other places. And AMC and Malco have not yet been approved for permits. But Malco, as of March 13th, hadn't turned in an application for its Razorback Cinema. And AMC, for its Fiesta Square 16, applied for the same permit held by larger venues like the Walton Arts Center and Razorback Sports Facilities. And that's unusual because most theaters that serve alcohol in Arkansas hold an on-premise beer and wine permit that doesn't require them to serve food. And this type of license means AMC will have to prove that it has the ability to serve 900 plus of its seats full meals. So that'll be its capacity once it's renovated.
And like you say, this would be a relatively new idea for Northwest Arkansas. There aren't any movie theaters here that serve alcohol currently, but that's a practice that's been going on for a while in other areas of the state as well as in other parts of the country. Is that right?
That's right.
And so how quickly is it catching on elsewhere? How quickly is that trend spreading to other areas?
Well, first of all, Matt Smith, who now serves alcohol at his Riverdale 10 Cinema in Little Rock and at his Hot Springs VIP Cinema, has actually been doing this since the year 2000. And it started at Market Street Cinema. So he's been doing it for several years. And nationwide, there were 14 serving alcohol in 1997, and that number grew to 400 in 2008. Since then, it's grown exponentially, and there has been pushback, especially about potential underage drinking in other states. But an AMC representative said it offers liquor in 240 of its U.S. cinemas and that customers have enthusiastically embraced the change.
All right, and finally, this is a press week here for us at the Business Journal, working on the next issue, focusing on residential real estate. You're working on a story on the percentage of renters versus homeowners in the region. What have you found out so far?
Well, renting is on the rise in NWA and nationwide, according to census data. And according to Adobo, which is an apartment rental site, 46% of NWA residents rented their homes in 2015. So I'm talking to local real estate watchers about what might be driving this trend and what it means for the local economy.
All right, good stuff. That's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal reporter Jennifer Joyner. You can keep up with her work and other headlines from around the region on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by The Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Finally today, it's mid-March, and for most people that means basketball and brackets. As most of America begins preparing their picks for the upcoming NCAA men's basketball tournament, hardly anyone will be immune from March Madness. Filling out a bracket and trying to project the Final Four and national champion has taken on a life of its own through the years. 3 years ago, Berkshire Hathaway CEO Warren Buffett even got swept up with the excitement, partnering with Quicken Loans to offer $1 billion to anyone who picked a perfect bracket. With odds of 1 in 9.2 quintillion, no one won. If that's too minuscule to wrap your brain around, I'll simplify it. It's next to impossible. That does it for today's edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
And just for the record, my incredibly unimaginative Final Four, Duke, Maryland, Louisville, and North Carolina. We'll check back in a couple weeks, see how I did. Ozarks at Large, supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. KUAF is supported by The New School, an independent school educating one-year-olds to high school. The school's faculty and student-centered learning environment focus on developing the whole child and preparing them for college and life. Details, including preview days and Whitaker scholarship information, available at 521-7037 or thenewschool.org. This morning, the Arkansas Supreme Court upheld a lower court ruling that Washington County Regional Hospital does own the 4 acres where City Hospital in Fayetteville used to be. That decision means that an agreement between the hospital and the library to sell the 4 acres from the hospital to the library can apparently go through. That's where a proposed expansion would take place. We'll have more on this on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Arkansas Supreme Court making that ruling earlier this morning. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Goodman, Missouri. We'll end with The Lark and the Loon, a great duo who will be at Bike Rack Brewing Company in Bentonville. A full Irish set tomorrow night for St. Patrick's Day. You can learn more about them at thelarkandtheloon.com. This is their recording of Up on a Cloud, coming from the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.